accession number 4600, reel 6.
Flight Lieutenant Townsend, reel 6. Going back to the days of the Spanish Civil War, you spent some time in the British consulate in Barcelona.
Yes, that's correct. The first time we went there, we sent a pack set up to the consulate so that there was obviously a line of communication between the ship and the consulate people in case of trouble, because the whole thing was a bit fraught ashore in Barcelona. And, you know, we were in the Fleet Air Arm side, we always felt very pent up, not being able to get ashore. And so I asked the Chief Petty Officer Telegraphist that if we came back to Barcelona any time, would it be possible for me to go up to the consulate with the pack set? And bless him, he agreed. And so the second time we returned to Barcelona, I was allowed to go to the consulate with this battery-operated pack set with a very senior telegraphist named Barber. The job there was quite tedious, actually, because we just had to stay in the consulate all day and work routine calls. I think it was every 4 hours to the ship. And then at night time, we hopped into a Ford V8 belonging to the consulate and stayed at the vice consul's house, at the back, which was on rising ground at the back of the town.
Why did they need someone from the Fleet Air Arm to go to the consulate?
Well, they didn't, in point of fact. Normally, the first time, you see, we were there, it was two naval telegraphists went. And it was just that as there was no flying all the time we were around Spain, and I was very much at a loose end, having been trained, of course, as a wireless operator as well as a mechanic, I was able to muck in with the ship's company on the telegraphist side. And so to make an extra hand for them, I offered to go to the consulate with this pack set. They were very short-staffed, in point of fact. When we were at Valencia earlier, we had to set up work a wave with the embassy there. And that wave was operated by my spare aircraft sets, which we rigged up as being the only ones that would cover the frequency we were given. And by that time we had the Walrus, of course, which carried a telegraphist air gunner as part of the crew. And the TAG and myself, we operated this embassy wave. And so, simply because they were short-handed. They're always short-handed on the signal side. So at Barcelona, I was spare, and the pilot was quite happy, pilot, of course, being our CO, he was quite happy to see me fully occupied, and so I went up to the embassy with the set. So it was a run ashore for me, and it relieved the situation for the telegraphists.
What type of messages were you receiving and transmitting?
Well, fundamentally, they were just routine calls. We called the ship. We called the ship just to let them know that all was well every 4 hours. But on top of that, we did pass a certain amount of cipher traffic for the consulate to the ship. The ship, of course, having quite powerful radios, they would then pass it on to the Admiralty or wherever else it was required to go. But the low-power stuff, we had just a low-powered link with the ship, and we used it. We operated on dry batteries, which had a fairly limited life, so that we couldn't pass all that much traffic, but we did pass a fair bit for them and keep the communications open that way. At the vice consul's house overnight, where we used to stay, and at weekends, we had a room at the top of the house, which obviously used to be the nursery, but we had it up there because they had a balcony, and we could drop an aerial wire over the balcony and give ourselves a bit of extra range to work with the ship. The range was getting a bit marginal then between the ship and the house. But we had a most odd thing one night. We had a routine call at 1 a.m., which was a bit of a bind, but never mind, it had to be done. And it was my turn to do it. And I called the ship, and they replied, but the reply to me was so very weak that I could only give them strength 1 on the old 10-point scale. And I knew they were answering, but it was just too weak to read. And we persisted for about 5 minutes, and I still couldn't make any sense of what they were trying to tell me. And in the end, they came up on full power. And, of course, that was all right, no bother at all. But then, when I went back on board, they told me that there had been a report from a ship at Alicante, which I believe is about 250 miles away, saying that he'd heard our DK-1 and DK-2, that was the ship and myself, both strength 9 on that particular night. It was the first time I'd really come across anomalous propagation.
Once you were at the consulate, were you able to get any kind of sense of the situation in Spain during the Civil War?
Oh, well, yes, we did. We had several instances of how jumpy everything was. One of them happened on the very first night we went back to the house. It was a nice evening in the summer, and I opened these French windows and stepped out on the balcony, just taking in a breath of air. And my colleague, Barber, he came and shoved me on one side and put the light out, and then afterwards showed me a bullet hole in the wall where the chap who'd gone up with him the time before had done exactly what I did, and someone from somewhere or other had taken a pot shot at him with a rifle. Then on one weekend, I know we were excused one of the routine calls so that we had 8 hours off. And we couldn't go out anywhere, but we found a ball in the garden, and we were kicking this around, having game football with some of the staff. And I kicked it over the wall into the next garden, and without thinking, I just jumped up to go and retrieve it. And the chauffeur grabbed me by the ankles, rather rudely, roughly, and pulled me back down again very quickly. And, I was a bit upset, but he let me know that if I'd gone over into the next garden, the chances were that I would have been shot. People were, if they had any sort of firearms at all, they shot first and they asked afterwards, especially if you were found on private property. And there was no traffic control when we drove down to the consulate from the house. There was absolutely no traffic control at all. And when we came to a crossroad, for example, the driver fortunately knew his onions and was very good. But you always got several near misses on the way in and out.
You mean there were no traffic lights?
No traffic lights and no traffic police, nothing. Absolutely nothing at all. Food, of course, was very short too. To get a picture of what life was like there, what I'd suggest is, I gave you some written records, and that had an extract from a paper that had been written by one of the ship's officers. It gave the whole political situation, and it was very, very well done. And I'd certainly recommend anybody to read that if they want a picture of life in the government-held side of Spain in civil war.
You mentioned the shortage of food. Did the people seem to be suffering great privation?
Well, we couldn't get out, so we couldn't really see what how the ordinary people were living. But we knew that even in the on the diplomatic staff, the food wasn't all that plentiful. We didn't starve, obviously, but because they saw to it that we got food, but there certainly wasn't over much, and we had to go short with everybody else.
What restrictions were placed on your movements?
Well, none, except by the service itself. We were just there to do a job, and that job was either at the consulate or at the vice consul's house. And we were simply ferried in between the two, and that was it. We couldn't move outside those two places. Frankly, it was dangerous to move outside those two places.
You talked about the danger just now, and you mentioned the bullet hole in the wall of the British consulate in Barcelona. Did that mean that there was anti-British feeling in Barcelona at the time?
Oh, I don't think so particularly. It was just that anyone doing what I'd done with a lighted room behind him at dusk and standing silhouetted in the window just presented a very tempting target. And I think they were just trigger happy, having a pot shot. I don't think there's anything anti-British about it.
So you didn't come across any instance of anti-British feeling in Barcelona?
Oh, no. Well, no, we couldn't. We did, when we were, the first time we were there and we were taking off refugees and so on, some of the population used to, we were tied up alongside a mole, and some of the population used to take a Sunday afternoon walk out there and give us communist salutes and so on with the clenched fist, but We ignored them as far as we possibly could and just let them get on with it.
When you said they gave you these salutes, was this in a hostile way or just hoping to get some friendly response from you?
I don't know. We never knew, quite honestly. They seemed peaceable enough, and they knew we were supposedly non-interventionist and taking off refugees. But of course, the people that were taken off, the refugees that were taken off, some of them were frankly escaping from the communist government side of Spain. Quite a few of them, I would say, were just escaping. So that's beside the foreigners.
What made you think that they were escaping?
Oh, because at the time, We knew that, we knew from what we heard every night that on the fort overlooking Barcelona Harbour, there were always rifle volleys at night where some poor unfortunate was executed. And from what we heard around the place at the time, there were a lot of private feuds were settled under the guise of these people being political enemies. And, of course, anyone who was an officer in any of the forces before was an automatic suspect and executed if he was caught.
Did you gather, whilst you were at the Barcelona consulate, did you gather what the attitude of the permanent staff at the consulate was towards the political and military situation in Spain at the time?
Not really. I think there was a problem of communication for a start, because neither Barbara or I spoke Spanish, unfortunately, and the chauffeur, I think it was very fluent in French, and I had a certain amount of French from school days, with which we used to communicate through the chauffeur, but that was the only way we could keep in touch at all. The permanent staff, they were very friendly towards us, and we got on extremely well with them. There's no problem there at all, but we couldn't say the communication wasn't really fluent enough so that we could get an opinion of what was going on outside.
But I was thinking of the British people who constituted the staff at the consulate. Did they give any indication as to what they thought about the political situation in Spain?
Well, no, they didn't. We had very little contact with them. You see, Barbara was a telegraphist and I was an airman, and I suppose the class distinction then was very much more pronounced than it would be now, and there was hardly any communication between the diplomatic staff and ourselves. I mean, at the clerk level, yes, probably there was, but that was about all. Going back now to the job we did at Valencia when we were guardship, we were anchored 4 miles offshore. We took over the first time from the Royal Oak, and I think she was only about 2 miles out, but we went 4 miles out because there was some bullets or something landed on the quarterdeck of the Royal Oak, we were told, so we went a little bit further out. But what we had to do was to work a frequency with the embassy, again, a line of communication. And what was interesting was the fact that by then we'd got the Walrus, so we had much better equipment, and radio equipment, than we had in the Osprey. And the frequency that we were given was in the HF band, and there was absolutely nothing on board that the Navy could use, that they had no radio equipment that would work on that frequency, except possibly this little pack set that we took up to the consulate at Barcelona. We tried to communicate with the embassy with that. We stuck it on the upper deck when we approached, but it was just too weak, and we couldn't get anywhere with it at all. So then I suggested that we use the spare aircraft sets out of the Walrus. And Navy were a bit reluctant at first to admit that the Air Force had got something that could do the job, and they hadn't. But nevertheless, we installed those in the emergency WT office of the Shropshire. And the telegraphist, air gunner, and myself, we manned a 24-hour duty working with the embassy. The interesting thing there was that although the embassy chap was coming through loud and clear to us, no bother, it's all WT, of course, no RT, but he was coming through very well to us. And we found, obviously you have a bit of chit-chat with the operator at the other end, and we found that it was a civilian diplomatic operator, diplomatic wireless service operator in the embassy. And he was working a daily routine with Whitehall direct. And one day I asked him what equipment he was using, and he was using the same aircraft sets that we were using in the Shropshire. Later on, the Admiralty sent out designs for a receiver and a transmitter to work on a harbour wave. You know, when ships are in harbour, they all work on the common wave and regulate their traffic in between ships accordingly. Well, Admiralty pushed out these designs for harbour wave sets, and the people on board had a go at making them up, but not very successfully. And I took the job over and finished making the transmitter and receiver for them, and they worked quite well. And in fact, in 1939, when I was back in Malta, I saw a meta telegraphist from the Shropshire, who was then in the crew of the Shropshire. And he said, he was bragging a bit, saying that they were the only ship in harbour that could work all the other ships without trouble. And I said, well, what equipment are you using? He said, oh, it's homemade stuff. And he started to describe it, and I finished describing it for him. In fact, it was the same sets that I'd knocked up myself in 1936-37. They were still using them. But we found too, when we were ashore at Califrana, the inter-command working of the Air Force was nominally using Marconi SWB-8B sets, which worked extremely well. But on the other hand, one of the mechanics there, a colleague of mine named Jock Swinney, he knocked up some homemade transmitters, which worked in fact better than the Marconi ones, and they were used regularly on the intercommand waves. That was direct to the Middle East and direct to Air Ministry in Whitehall.